So, Brian, how can my real estate photography business grow and stay on the cutting edge?
You need to start using HDPhotoHub.com. All you do is upload your photos and your clients get a property website, social media flyers, and videos all automatically.
That sounds pretty good. So how do I get started?
Well, it's pretty easy, Rich. All you do is register at HDPhotoHub.com. If you use the referral code SHOOTINGSPACES, you get your first property marketing kit absolutely free.
Free?
I did say free.
Okay.
HD Photo Hub is where great photos become a powerful marketing kit. Again, that's HDPhotoHub.com.
Welcome to Shooting Spaces, a real estate photography podcast. Discussions on gear, technique, industry news, and interviews with the best in the business. Now, here are your hosts, Rich Baum and Brian Berkowitz.
Welcome to Shooting Spaces, a real estate photography podcast. This is Rich Baum from Sacramento, California.
And Brian Berkowitz from New York.
And welcome, 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 everybody out there in podcast land. Hey, Brian, how you doing today?
I am good. It is cold out here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And a little under the weather. That's what happens this time of year, as always. I've been under the weather for a little bit of time now, but hopefully we'll turn the corner soon and get back to it.
Yeah. And I'm on my way. I think tomorrow I'm going to go get my flu shot so I don't drop dead. And I've heard some people having problems in that realm, but I don't want to go into that. I just want to say it's great. Everything is fantastic on my end. I'm very busy. And it's funny, I'm busier now on November, December this year, or even last year too, and January and February, then it seems to be busier too. So that's good. My the times I used to be really busy aren't quite as busy. So it's kind of weird, but calm down, everybody. It's gonna pick up again. So don't worry about how it is right this minute.
Yeah, it definitely turns the corner. For me out here, it's usually about mid-March where it really turns the corner. And the first 2 months of the year, I'm usually pretty slow. Mm-hmm. But that allows me time to really work on my website and my marketing and come up with my new goals for 2019 and all that. So that's kind of what I'm busy with now is, you know, during the downtime, taking care of all the other stuff that once the season picks up, I don't even have time to think about. So
I am really excited about all the goals I have. So super, super good. I'm really...
Well, I know you have an Instagram goal and you're killing it.
I have been. See if I can keep it up. I seem to do this every year for, you know, a month or so.
Well, and as long as you're keeping it up, I'll keep commenting on how good you're doing at reaching your goals.
Yeah, that was a great podcast. So
when you stop, then I'll just not mention.
Okay, good, good, good.
So what's going on today, Rich?
We are so lucky to have a very good friend of mine, and I owe him a lot because he is a real estate, but also an interiors photographer and does some architectural photography in Berkeley, California. And I was lucky enough to shadow him about 5 or 6 years ago. And I got to say that was the day that it almost so much of what I do now came together. And I just want to say, everybody, go out there and shadow somebody if you can. But I want to introduce Peter Lyons of Peter Lyons Imaging. I think, is it Imaging, Peter? Is it
Peter Lyons Photography?
Peter Lyons Photography. And I got to say, before we get started, if you have the opportunity while you're listening to this podcast to check out Peter's website, I'll let him tell you his website address. But I certainly would say watch it while we're talking because it's going to really mean a lot to this whole conversation. So welcome, Peter.
Hey, thanks, Rich. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Brian, for having me on. Yeah.
Sure. Thanks for coming on. And I like Rich has told this story many times of him getting started and him shadowing you. So definitely want to thank you for showing Rich everything and him spreading the word all over the internet.
Yeah. You know what? I've always enjoyed the sort of collaborative aspect of this profession and love to plug in whenever the opportunity arises. I myself only have this career because of the generosity of other people, Thomas Gruba, Scott Hargis, Wayne Capilli. I've even, you know, met Mike Kelly a couple times, and it's been, I didn't make any of this up. I mean, you take the ideas you pick up from these people that mentor you or give you a hand or teach you something, and you sort of wind up combining it into your own sort of special sauce. That's how we all get our own look and our own approach. And that's a great thing. But I think it's good not to forget where it came from.
Well, I want to just tell everybody, if you've watched my videos or learned about the window pull in darken mode, well, I didn't invent it, and it was told to me by Peter. So thank you, Peter. But I think that
was taught to me by Wayne.
By Wayne, yeah. So, no, I don't even know if Wayne invented it, so it doesn't really matter. It's just good information. And of all the tips I think I've ever learned, I'll never forget. I was driving down in my car talking to you, and when you told me, and the concept of window pull in darken mode went into my brain, and a light bulb went off. It was literally life changing. Going, oh my gosh, this is going to be life changing. And it, so many people have replied to me through the years, just saying how you have, that is the most magical thing ever.
So it was life changing for me too, which is why I was so enthusiastically sharing it. I might have been oversharing it. I don't know, but and I think it was probably good that for a few years I had to suffer through, you know, drawing these manual polygonal lassos around houseplants and just hating my life. And then once you learn that one simple tool, it becomes one more tool in your arsenal. I don't pull every window, but man, it's just so much cleaner, so much better, so much faster, and it cuts out a really unpleasant task from the workflow.
Just a nice tip, a nice trick to have in your bag.
It's just one tip of many. But one of the fun things about this is, like, even like this year, I can think of a few things that I've started doing that I didn't use before, and now I use them like all the time. Clipping masks is one of them. Like, I didn't even really know it was a thing, and now I find myself so much more capable of making adjustments to just one layer that I've already masked in, and it needs a color adjustment or an exposure adjustment or whatever.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you 100% on that, because I, for a while, have not been using clipping masks. And I also started about 4 months ago, just you know, using a lot of clipping masks on my architectural work, and it has changed everything. And
yeah,
I outsource my clipping masks, so I have somebody do them all for me. So it really takes a lot of the time off sitting there with their pen tool, you know, making paths. But it changes everything, because like you said, just to be able to do localized adjustments, whether it's color or exposure or blending or anything, it just makes everything so much quicker. And then even to then go ahead and outsource that, it speeds up your workflow so much.
I outsource some of it for some, you know, other gigs I get. I'll do some occasional headshots or whatever, and they want like a pure white background with transparency. I never want to learn how to mask hair. I will be happy to outsource that until I die. But so I've got a place that does that for me. I'm real happy with it. It's amazingly cheap. But for the occasional real estate image, I'm not going to fuss around with that. But yeah, it's fantastic. Oh, and speaking of clipping masks and masks in general, the pen tool, people that were intimidated by the pen tool, you know, in previous years, because it had all these crazy, you had to memorize all the alt command control shift keys, and you had to drag these little wands out and stuff. They've tremendously simplified it. If you learned it that way, like the Mike Kellys of the world, you do magic with it. You can still turn it to the old way, but by default, it's much more intuitive now. It's simply a click to put a line on an arc, and a double click to make a sharp point. And it's just tremendously more intuitive.
Well, I'm going to be coming by your house and doing a shadowing session of editing.
There you go. Yeah, awesome. It's changed. It's, I mean, I don't use it, you know, if I'm doing just a simple polygon, you know, putting an image on a TV or something like that, where it's just like a 4-point thing, I'll just grab the polygonal lasso. But if I'm doing anything complex, the pen tool makes it easier, and it saves it as a path. And so you can go back to it, and then it's easy to convert it to a selection and blah, blah, blah. I'm probably getting off topic, but
nah, there is no topic.
Certainly going off on a tangent.
Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. Well, I want to, you know, there was a couple of things I wanted to bring you on and talk about. And one is, you know, getting together with people and sharing the knowledge and getting together. And it just so turns out that yesterday I shot two model homes and I invited a group member, Vincent Munoz, that I had never met before, but we had kind of been in contact and I invited him out. And it's really funny because I said, well, listen, come on by for like an hour, 2 hours. And that's all I can do because I really got to get back to work. But my main thing was I wanted an out in case I had never met him, in case it wasn't going well, like a first date. But Vincent actually stayed the whole day and we shot, I think I ended up with 22 images. And took me all day to do it because it wasn't real estate, but it was wonderful. And we had such a good time and I know he learned so much. So I just want you to talk about, you know, if you can get together with people and what you do when you do get together with people.
Oh, it's sort of changed function over the years and it depends on who I'm with. Sometimes I'm more learning. Other times I'm more mentoring, but it's never 100% just one or the other. Because like I've sort of learned, like you guys must know this by now, you learn a lot by trying to teach something. It really has a, you know, cute way of making you realize what you don't know about what you're trying to explain to someone else.
No, for sure. And you reevaluate what you actually know as you're saying it.
Right. There's certain things I still don't know. Like, I don't know, how does aperture work? Why doesn't it just make the picture smaller? But so someone needs to explain the physics of that to me another day. But anyways, so, you know, sometimes it's fun to be able to teach someone something new that's eye opening or changes their whole workflow or helps them out. A couple of people that have attended your workshop, Rich, have sort of partnered up with me on a couple shoots. You were even down assisting on a design shoot recently. So many of the aha moments from my history in this profession have been thanks to other people coming, like Wayne Capilli drove up from Monterey a couple times, three times, I don't know, to come, you know, do a shoot or two with me. I learned so much from watching that man. The whole light on a stick, I use it every day on every shoot for everything. And sure, you know, you take ideas like that and you sort of run with them and you sort of evolve them in your own direction, but man, it cuts years off of the learning curve when you get other people's ideas. And it's not just people who have been doing it longer than me and better than me, like Wayne or Scott or Thomas. It's amazing what you can learn from people who have been doing this kind of photography for a short amount of time, because maybe they're bringing knowledge from some other field or have some other trick in Photoshop that I don't know about. And it's eye-opening, and you learn something either way. And it's really valuable to have to know, like in your local market, who are the ones that really know what they're doing, because sometimes you have to pass along a referral. Sometimes you can't do it all yourself, and it's great to have someone who you know is going to take care of your client. They're professional, they're courteous, and they deliver work that's both really good and hopefully kind of similar to your own.
Yeah, I agree with you, Peter, 100%. I think learning from other people is the best way to go about it. I mean, nowadays, that's how I think most of us learn in general is whatever is watching YouTube videos or watching tutorials or reading articles. We're essentially learning from other people. I mean, none of us are graduating college learning how to shoot real estate photography. So, you know, the gist of our education comes from learning from other people. So yeah, like you said, seeing what other people do is the best way to go ahead and broaden your education and broaden your technique as far as what you're doing.
Yeah. And it's the same way with anything that people teach. It's, very few people, unless you're Albert Einstein or somebody, very few people have invented whatever they're teaching. So, you know, it's just all part of it. And I think it's great. And I just think it's wonderful how the internet has allowed us to have everything at our fingertips. It's good and bad, but it's really been great in this situation. So yeah, get out there and get together with a friend and, you know, see if you can spend some time shooting together. Really, really good for you.
Yeah, you know, even if it's something that's quite different from the way you do it yourself, like maybe you are, you know, a hardcore lighter, or maybe you're a hardcore HDR person. certainly isn't going to hurt you to watch someone use a completely different process. Like Rich was commenting in the last podcast that I listened to anyway, that Scott DuBose shot 8 million homes this year. And
he did.
Got this amazing process. And that might be a mild exaggeration, but the point stands that that man cranks through the places, and I gotta say, it looks really good.
And he's the only one we would believe it takes him 20 minutes to shoot it.
But he's got some process where, like, he gets back in his car and he has his laptop sitting on the seat next to him, and it's starting to work for him. And I'm like, I gotta learn some things from that man.
Yeah. By the time he hits the next block, his image is already edited. So.
Scott DuBose, by the way, if you're listening, is it DuBose or Dubois or DuBois? We've got a little bit of a pool going on, so chime in, okay?
Okay. I'd like the Dubois. I just think it's great, even if it's DuBose. Yeah. I think we should call him Dubois because
there's no
just,
I in there, so I don't know. It's really, I don't know.
And if anybody has missed it, go listen to the Scott DuBose Dubois interview, because that was very, very informative. It's really good.
Oh, yeah.
And Peter, I just want to say, when I spent, I went down and visited Peter outside of San Francisco, and he was doing a design shoot with the nicest decorator designer, and she's going to come on as a podcast guest, by the way, Brian. I don't think I've told you that, but it was just so wonderful to see how you work, because as I tend to base what I do, and I'm also doing different kind of work than you're doing, different houses in general. I am doing much more flash based, and you're doing much more ambient based, and just kind of adding on little bits of flash. And definitely what, when people in the group see, you know, like Wayne talking about it, or like Mike Kelly, or like Scott Hargis, any of the big boys, all the good guys, but they're doing this and they're getting their lights off axis. Well, I'm going to be working on that. That's one of my goals in 2019 is to, I don't know if I'm going to be teaching that, but because I'm still going to probably be doing the way I work a lot of the time, but I'm going to be working on what you put out there, because man, your work, again, people, if you can check out Peter Lyons, did you tell us the website? It's just the best work, Peter.
PeterLyonsPhoto.com. Thank you, Rich.
Man, really good. And it just shows you beginning, before and after shots, which are really, really, you'll go, oh my gosh, that's incredible. So no, it's just, but it looks so, so different to me. And I know though that you can do it. I've watched you do it pretty quickly. So, you know, it's doable. So I got to learn how to do it.
There's a few that, you know, our work continues to evolve, and it might even go like this way, then that way. Like I'll find myself over a period of months, like favoring more or less saturation, warmer or cooler. I'll even find like some clients that are like, okay, every time you send us something, also send us a set that's like 25-30% warmer. So, you know, they know what they like, and it's a lot warmer than how I naturally deliver it. So yeah, it all works fine. Everyone's happy. But yeah, like another thing that I've been doing more of lately is going further in terms of like selectively neutralizing unwanted color casts in certain areas. Now, I shoot with a 5D Mark IV, and it's got this auto white balance white mode that I love, because like normal auto white balance, I guess if you've got like, say, a tungsten lit space or a warm LED lit space, it's going to retain that warmth. But the auto white balance white does a really great job of giving me whites in,
you know, Peter, I have the Mark IV also, and I've kind of just been too afraid to use it.
You try it. You might really like it. If you like that sort of clean, I really like it. I mean, you could look, you know, on the flip side, you could look at it and go, that's really kind of too cool.
Yeah. Well, that's what I love. I love the clean look that your images have. And I shoot a very similar style to you where I'm very ambient heavy, and I just use flash almost as a fill when needed. And like I said, I use, you know, my designer architectural shoots, I use clipping pass to get that clean look and get rid of those color casts, but I have to maybe try this white balance white. I've just been too afraid to do it. You know, I guess it's a comfort level when, you know, you know, what you're doing is working and your clients are happy. Do I really want to start messing with something? But I guess I can do some practice shots and just get it down pat.
I am using clipping pads like we're describing here, but I think what I was trying to say earlier, and I don't have my laptop and Photoshop here in front of me, what I was trying to say was add, like you go under the layer palette and you say add, I swear to God, brain fart. I just cannot for the life of me recall what the thing is, but it's like, it will add an edit to the previous layer that's already been masked. That's what I was trying to describe. Like, let's say I've brought in an ambient layer.
Oh, you clip an adjustment layer to the previous layer. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And there's what is that called? Is it?
I think it's just clipping a layer.
It's under the layers palette in Photoshop. But anyways, yes, clipping pads are great.
And I know it's the keyboard shortcuts, the Alt button when you hover through them.
People are like, "What are these guys talking about?"
I'm going, "What are you guys talking about?" Okay, I'm in Photoshop and layers.
Yeah, go under layers and scroll down like a third of the way down, and it's like add. I wish I brought my laptop here.
Okay, that's okay.
Whatever.
We'll have you on again because most of this is unusable, so we'll just have to redo it another time.
You guys have show notes? We'll add it to the show notes.
Do we, Brian? I think you're the guru. Do we have show notes?
Sure, we can add some show notes with
we'll
add a show note with a little screenshot of exactly what Peter's referring to. And Peter, I'm putting that on you. Get me the screenshot.
Would be the perfect. I would love if this was a video podcast because I have an idea that this would have been pretty funny to watch. So that's something we got to do next year too, Brian. Video, chats.
I'm never going to see one of the video ones because I always listen to every one of these when I'm driving to shoots. I spend my life driving.
I think even if we start doing video, our goal is to obviously still release the podcast as it is, but you know, potentially release it as a video cast as well on YouTube and other channels. Yeah. So you'll still be able to listen just the way you are. But if you want to stare at, Rich and my ugly faces, you can do that too.
I would love that so, so much.
Cool. So let me ask you, Peter, let me take a step back a little bit. How did you even get started in real estate photography and architectural photography?
Photography was always a thing that I enjoyed. My dad got me a really nice Canon AE-1 program back in like 83 as a gift. Like, it was like 13, and I just took to it. It just came out of the blue. I'd never really expressed an interest in something like that before, but I loved it. And pursued it. I got to say, like, all the stuff I was doing is all program mode and whatever, back then, shooting Kodachrome or whatever, wasn't doing anything remarkable, but I really liked it. And went off and pursued other careers, trying to be more responsible or whatever, but came back to that. I lost a computer programming job.
Are you saying being a professional photographer is not being responsible?
Well, it wasn't. No, it's been like the best thing I've done. But at the time, there's certain like pressure to be an engineer or something.
Yeah, so I know.
I had to go and flunk out of engineering school, get a expensive degree in geography that made me about $15 in my life. But anyways, I made maps for a while. I programmed computers for a while and then came full circle back around. And now I'm doing photography. It took me a while to land on, real estate and architecture. I did sailing for a while, sailing photography. That was a great time. I got some recognition. I got some magazine covers, but it just wasn't making the money it needed to be a viable career. So, I'd been shooting some houses for a family that was flipping homes and was willing to use me just because I was there and they knew me and they liked me. And the work I did was, looking back on it, like amateur in every way, did everything wrong, broke every rule because I didn't know what the rules even were. But when I needed to find something else, it just sort of stood out as something that I could pursue. So I literally just started cold calling real estate offices, and I was doing like the worst kind of HDR at the time. But it was a start. I mean, I was trying. I mean, my work might have sucked, but I was trying. I was really earnestly seeking ways to improve. Then I caught this, Thomas Gruba being interviewed on the, what was that other podcast.
Tony Merritt. What was it? We've interviewed him. We interviewed Tony.
Right.
The Real Estate Photography Podcast, I think.
Right. Yeah. So I heard Thomas on there, and I lived in Oakland at the time. I live in Petaluma now. Thomas literally like put out a call like, hey, if you want to get together and talk about this.
Amazing.
And it's like it's open invitation. I like picked my phone up right away. And sure enough, the man said, hey, come shooting with me. And I got to shoot with him several times. And he invited me into his home and he showed me his post-production workflow. And it's like he handed me my career. And then on the tail of that, then Scott Hargis also lived in Oakland, still does. And I'm just blown away by the generosity of the other people who I've had the good fortune of meeting in this profession. I mean, I mentioned Wayne, but I mean, Daniel, there's so many, Seth, people with just an amazing set of talents that have been so willing to help a guy out.
So you know? Peter, what is your phone number so people can call you? And you just go on your website. Okay.
8675.
Look, I feel like I'm missing out and I'm living on the West Coast now.
Well, Northern California, baby, or at least California in general. We got some pretty good shooters there. Not me, but you guys are pretty darn good. That's wonderful.
I know, like, you know, I get some pushback, like, from my wife, who's more conservative and cautious than I am. And I understand it. I respect it. Like, well, you can't just give away all your secrets. And I'm like, you know what? Other people, like, Scott and Thomas were literally helping me when I was right there in their backyards. And nothing bad has ever come of it. It's always been, like, the long-term effect of it has been nothing but, like, a really positive, friendly working relationship. I mean, I've got a lot more from them than they have ever got from me. That's for sure. It's not like it's been a lot of back and forth. I was the total beneficiary and they were just being super incredibly nice. But, you know, if I get a chance to pay it forward here and there, it's a pleasure to do it. I like that. I like the collaborative, the opportunity to collaborate with other professionals in this. And I got the feeling that it's all going to work out. Like I'd much rather, I think it's a little bit of a cynical thing, you know, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. I don't consider these people my enemies, but I mean, it can't hurt to be friendly, you know, have a friendly relationship with other people doing the same thing in the same area. I mean, how could that hurt?
Sure. I mean, we've said that dozens and dozens of times.
Right. That's exactly what you guys are doing. You know, you're just broadcasting all this information out there for whoever would care to soak it up. Which is great. I think it's awesome.
Good. I'm going to refer everybody to you then. Okay. That's great. No, I believe it. I think it's great. I feel the same way. I'm a harmonica player. Most people don't know. I was a studio harmonica player for years. I've been playing for 40 years. And I used to just go try and get information from some of these old black blues players, and they're like looking at me like, I ain't gonna tell you nothing. no hints whatsoever. And now you can find everything you'd ever want to know about harmonica online. So same thing with photography.
It never even occurred to me to try to learn harmonica online, but now I've got it, you know, now that my my shoots have just fallen off a cliff, you know, I'm looking for for new hobbies. So,
well, you do other photography too. If you go to the website, what's your website again?
PeterLyonsPhoto.com. And I just, you know what? I just had my brain fart came.
Oh, God.
Clipping mask and clipping path. Two different things. Okay. Like a clipping path is just a path. Uh-huh. A clipping mask is like a mask that gets applied to the previous layer.
Clipped to the layer beforehand.
Yes. Yeah. So it's like only applying to like whatever mask was applied to the previous layer. And I think you can refine it further. I'm not a master of the tool, but it's a ad clipping mask.
Well, how are we going to learn? Do you have a link we can put in the show notes?
As soon as you make a tutorial, you can post one.
I got it. Oh, please. I tell people, I don't know how I got saddled with teaching anybody anything about Photoshop, because I suck at Photoshop.
So you self-selected yourself, Rich. I don't believe you got nominated. I believe you just took off and started running with it, and a lot of people have benefited from it.
Oh, I get these comments all the time. Well, you should be doing this, and I'm like, you're right. I should be doing a lot of things, but I want to learn about clipping paths and masks and things like that, so maybe I'll get it from you one day, but I'm going to certainly do a search for it, and maybe we'll put in a good video tutorial. Or if somebody can call in from Ask the Guys, remember out there, Ask the Guys, record your questions, but you can also record it and tell us about clipping paths and how to do them. So,
hey, I have an idea. I have an idea for something that you should always ask guests. Or that you should throw out, like, you know, like Rich, and I don't really know much about the content you actually did in your tips and tricks workshops, but like tips and tricks are like a great concept. I know Kelby's.
I've had people say you should be embarrassed or you should be ashamed of yourself for calling it tips and tricks because it's all strong concepts. And I'm like, oh my God. Okay.
Whatever.
Yeah, okay. Whatever. Anyway, so, go on.
Like, I think there's like every once in a while, there's something that you'll learn and it's like, it's just so immediately helpful once you get the hang of it that it like really kind of changes the way you go forward from there. And I have a couple of them that come to mind, but they're not relevant to real estate photography. Is that still permitted? I don't even know if I'm allowed to have ideas like that.
Sure.
Hey. Okay. So like one of the things that I didn't use for years on my Canon cameras was the custom modes. Custom modes are so helpful, not for real estate photography because I'm just in manual the whole time, but the way it does apply in real estate photography potentially is like the agent goes, oh my God, there's a deer in the backyard. Can you get a quick photo of the deer?
Yep.
And then I got to go, grab a different lens, and then two, go out and like, at, you know, F8 and one, you know, 15th of a second, which is not going to do the job. So then I'm fussing around. But now that I have a custom mode defined, that's like pretty good for a lot of things. It's auto ISO. Yeah. It's got the focus pattern and the focus mode, like AI servo. It's got its aperture priority f5.6. You can still change it. But you can even like tell it like how it calculates the shutter speed, like based on, mine uses the sort of rule of thumb that your shutter speed should be
twice the focal length.
Yeah. Or whatever. And you can, but it even has a way that you can adjust that up or down, like specific to that rule, or you can set it by different rules. Like you could just say, always fix it at 200 or whatever.
And I'd like to add, because I've had that on Nikon cameras for years and I never used it. And then I got my Sony A7IIIs and I used the custom dial. Now, these are just to let people know out there, you're talking about your camera has on your dial, you have a C1 or a C2, right? You're talking about? Yeah. So these are little dials. And the thing I love about it the most is if I'm shooting a wedding and I do have to switch or something, I've changed settings or something, if I want to get back to a baseline where I know where my beginning is, all I have to do is go on that custom setting and it's back to exactly where I know it's going to be. So it is great. So that's great. Yeah. People out there, use your custom if you have it. I think most cameras have it. Use your custom button, your custom wheel.
I can't remember if my 6D did. The 5D series has, but like the Rebels don't. It varies. But if you do have it, like I literally overlooked it for years, and I could have been benefiting from it.
Now, did you say you're shooting Canon Mark IV, 5D Mark IV? Awesome. How do you like it?
I love it. It's a beast of a camera, but I even have a battery grip on it for the first time. I've been shooting it for the last year that way. And by far it is just, I love that camera. It's fantastic. It's got like, it's fantastic heft. I mean, even look at these mirrorless cameras. I'm like, I know that's the way it's going. And I think it's really cool. I love the tech, but man, that looks so small. I love the feel of this one.
And I want to bring up something because I've always been a Nikon and now I'm a Sony, but I am a Canon when it comes to tilt shift lenses. And I want to share that. I have been so excited since I got my 17 millimeter Canon tilt shift because it's just been really wide and great for real estate photography. And everybody in all the groups, everybody's talking about how the 17 is great. And Sam Chen says, well, you can just, you know, crop in if you want to get tighter with a 17 and it'll be just like a 24. Well, I'll tell you something. Yesterday doing the model home shoot, I kept putting on my 17 and then I'm going, no. And I'd keep telling Vincent, go get me the 24. I used the 24 all day and it was absolutely a total joy. I never realized how much distortion and how much it stretched everything, the 17. And I was just floored how the 20, if I can get by with 24 now, I'm shooting 24. That 17 is great for certain things, but it's not going to be my primary lens now. I think the 24 is going to be my primary. I just love it.
You know, fantastic. Speaking of distortion with a tilt shift lens, I saw Scott Hargis demonstrate something once that was like a really interesting lesson and sort of a little bit of thinking outside the box. Like normally I put in a tilt shift lens because I want to have a higher point of view, but still keep the subject matter on the lower part of the room, for instance, like in a kitchen where I want to see over the island to see the expensive appliances and more cabinetry rather than staying down low, but then just having everything blocked by the island. But there's another thing you can do with it too. And Scott was doing a shot where I think it was in a kitchen and there was a wall clock, a round wall clock, and the wall clock was over on the right hand side of the frame, say.
And that was in his workshop, wasn't it?
Maybe.
I remember the clock.
Yeah.
I remember the kitchen. So we both did. By the way, people, Peter and I both took the Scott Hargis workshop about 5 years ago, just on different days. So that's what we're referring to.
Yeah. Yeah. What he did was he wanted the wall clock on the right-hand side of the composition, but he didn't want it stretched. Mm-hmm. So he framed up with the wall clock in the middle of the composition and then shifted in the direction where he wanted everything else. So now he's got the wall clock on the right-hand side of the frame, no distortion, and has put the distortion in other areas where it's not as noticeable.
Yeah. I want to say
for a second, but
on your website, you can see before and after comparisons, and you do a couple of your shots where you're shifting from right to left or left to right. And it is something I don't do, but I am certainly going to start thinking about doing it because that looks magical. Just magical.
I don't do it often. It's, you know, definitely adds to the post-production efforts, but every now and then it's just another tool to put in your little toolbox. And
now, let me ask you, Peter, when you do that, sorry, Rich, for interrupting. Do you deliver the same aspect ratio or you deliver a different, like a more 16:9 type of look?
Definitely. I'm not shy about delivering whatever aspect ratio works. I mean, even like in just say an ordinary bedroom shot, it's not too uncommon for me to go, you know what? Got way more ceiling than I need here. I'm just going to crop it down. And I don't even limit myself to the standard ones. I just freeform drag in a line to crop and go with it. And I've never had anyone give me any pushback. I mean, maybe that's not true, but it's nothing that can't be fixed later. If they do ask for something else, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah.
Even MLS?
It's no. The only thing people complain about with the MLS is they don't like verticals. I mean, every once in a while, I'm like, dude, the only way to shoot this bathroom is vertically. And they're like, yeah, I know, let's just do it. But yeah, if I can do 16:9 or whatever for the MLS, and I've never had anyone go, that doesn't work.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
what about you, Brian? What are you doing?
I'm usually delivering just 3:2. I never really change it up. I don't know why. Or vertical also 2:3, I guess if you want to call it that. But yeah, I'm usually staying with that aspect ratio for some reason. Unless there's something really glaring at top and bottom and I want to crop it out, I guess, for effect and deliver something kind of like 16:9 or something like that. But it's very, very rare that I do that, but not something that I'm opposed to. So,
right.
Break the rules, no reason not to.
Sometimes I'll just sort of try it. And if I don't get any pushback, I'm just like, well, I guess everyone's all right with that. I liked the composition better. Yeah, some rooms I just feel like look better with sort of a wider crop.
Well, the only thing it's going to have is possibly have a little more of a black border on MLS. So it's not going to be that big of a deal. It's not as bad as doing a vertical shot.
And also, like, you know, the verticals don't work so well on MLS, but the less strongly vertical it is, the better it does work. So, like, if you shoot a bathroom vertically, because it's the only way to get, like, the lamp and the tile floor and the cabinetry and all of it, you can still, like, crop out some of the ceiling and some of the unnecessary flooring, and maybe you wind up with more of a, like, an 8x10. So it's not as pronounced of a vertical format, and it'll fill up more of that horizontal frame the way the MLS displays stuff.
Cool. Something to do. Everybody out there, just know. And something I preach a lot and tell people that you can take two vertical shots and put them side by side. And that works too. I just recommend, if you're going to do it, I use a program called Blog Stomp, and it gives me a border. So if you're going to put two images together, just kind of have some kind of a black or white border so you can split them. So people can see that it is two separate images instead of one.
Yeah, you're not talking about stitching them. You're talking about, like, displaying them on a website or on the MLS or whatever.
Yeah, you just do two, three twos side by side, and it really pretty much makes makes a regular MLS size shot.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and your clients love it. My clients love it. So
yeah, I have never delivered anything like that.
Well, there you go.
No. It sounds like a lot of work, Rich. I might just outsource it to you.
Blog Stomp, baby. Blog Stomp. Just put it in there and click and it's done. So if it's for blogs, you can put it like four or five different images together, and they have all these. It just figures everything out.
I know some people put together these, like, mosaics of photos on Instagram. I don't even know how to do that. I'm pretty...
Blog Stomp. No.
I guess. Who knows?
Okay. This episode is sponsored by Blog Stomp. I've got to give them a call. I wish, yeah. If you're a sponsor out there, give us a call, okay?
Peter, are you also a drone pilot?
I am a drone pilot. I have my FAA license.
Yeah, I see some of your aerial shots on your website. So.
Fun with it. I've crashed three of them, but I'm insured. It's all good. I just keep doing it.
You crashed three of them and you still have insurance? Wow.
Well, later we all crashed at the beginning.
I'm sort of self-insured. The insurance hasn't. I haven't had the insurance the whole time. I was sort of like
self-insured. That means when it breaks, you buy yourself a new one.
That's how it was. Like, literally, my first drone, I got it and I crashed into a tree.
I remember.
Second day, my son's there going, you know, slow down a little bit, Dad. You're getting kind of cocky. I'm like, I got this. Boom, into a tree. Crashed over a barbed wire fence in the port of Oakland, and I didn't get another drone for another year. That was a painful $1,500 lesson.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you used to fly it too. And there's rumors. There's an interesting, funny story, but I'm not trying to put you on a spot or anything, Rich.
Rumors, I'm hearing. I'm listening. Come on.
That there might have been some embarrassing, you know, ill-timed
crash. I was, you know, I don't fly my own drones anymore, but I remember my first P1, I think it was. I took my son out and we went to our local school, and I was going to do a fly through the entrance of a house, and the entrance had double doors on both sides. I was going to fly down the driveway. It's like $5 million house. Down the driveway, I was going to fly through it was either going to have the doors open automatically by somehow. I was going to fly through the little corridor. I was going to go out the other side, and I was going to go out and then turn around and back away from the house, and it would reveal this mansion and grapevines. So I took
Peter, you were getting cocky?
No. Well, I come from movies. I can do this. So I got the drone and I went with my son down to my local school. It's like 6 years ago. Drone to my local school, and I'm practicing with him, and he's walking and I'm kind of going with him, and he's walking and he stops, and the drone keeps going and it keeps going, and he's going, Dad, what's going on? And it just flies right into a chain link fence. The 15 minutes after I got it, and it was done. It was never able to be fixed. And I was going to cry. It was too so bad.
Brian, do you fly them? right?
Yes, I'm a licensed pilot as well. Yeah.
Are you flying? One of the big ones, or what? Do you just do a lot of?
Oh, well, I just a couple of weeks ago I sold my Phantom 4 Pro and I picked up the Mavic 2 Pro.
Oh, yes, nice.
I just got it last week. I did my first job with it 2 days ago and loving it.
That's with the Hasselblad camera?
Yes. You know, it's funny because it's almost like a toy compared to the Phantom 4, which is not that big either. But the controls are so much better and the quality of the images are fantastic.
These small drones, I mean, and the smaller sensors do incredible work for what they are. Daniel Milstein was saying that he'll use a Mavic Air with prop guards to shoot interior video.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks really good. It looks like he's selective about his timing. Like he's doing it, you know, sort of around dusk when, you know, you can turn on the interior lights and you don't have like crazy sunshine beaming across a room, shining on white furniture or cabinetry. But it looks, I mean, it allows you motions that would be really difficult to get any other way. And
sure, I mean, I've heard of people that also with the drones, instead of buying a gimbal, they'll just hold their drone and do it like that.
I've seen people do that. I've seen a local competitor here doing that. Yeah, it seems like you'd have to really choose your time though, because they're, you know, small sensors, not so great in low light. But I don't do video at all. I just have stayed away from it.
Yeah, that's one of my goals for this year, is to start pushing a lot of video a little bit more. There's not many good real estate videographers or video service providers out of my area, so I really want to capture the market this year.
All I can say is, if you're going to get into video, and the reason I stay out of it is because you've really, to make it worthwhile and do quality work, you just got to charge the right amount of money. You can't go cheap, because it is just so much work. And on all ends, editing, shooting, everything. So
it's an entirely different kind of production. And you're right. It would be easy to get yourself talked into a dollar amount that later on you're going to be kicking yourself for. It still happens to me on jobs here and there.
I think it happens to all of us on jobs more often than we'd like, but
yeah.
Okay.
I guess some money is better than no money, right?
It is. Sort of.
So let me ask you, Peter, because I know that we're going to be running out of time, and it's been great, but I wanted to just ask you, is there something you're it's 2019, is there something that you're looking forward to, and what is one of your goals in doing regarding photography?
Yeah, I want Brian Berkowitz to charge more than $7 for each additional shot after the
you're bringing down the market, really, Brian. Bringing down the market, baby.
Yeah, but my starting price for 10 is significantly higher than most people.
That's true. So we're gonna cut you some slack on that. Seriously though, have you guys ever heard of the sales notion of get 100 no's?
Yep.
So I want to get 100 no's, and I'm not talking realtors. I want to, like, I can work myself into the ground, and I work such long hours, guys. I know you both do too, but it's awesome, but I gotta say, it's a grind. It is a lot of hours during the busy season. And some of my, and I love my realtor clients. I love this gig. I feel so fortunate that I get to do this, but I would love to pursue more bigger, cooler clients with the cool commercial jobs. And they, you know, getting realtor work is easy. You call a realtor, they've got listings. They're like, it's just one person you need to talk to. But if you want to land a deal shooting, commercial office space or a new residential complex, and all you know is some big architecture or construction firm as a starting point, you got a lot of work to do to get from there to where you are shooting it and getting fair compensation for it. So that's like my big goal for the next year. In fact, I've even been starting to look at CRM software. What is it? What does that stand for? Client relations management or something like that. And I'm going to be doing like a little screen share with a rep from Salesforce next week, just to see if that's something I want to go with. Wife is skeptical, but one of the way that I sort of fall off of this is I'll be driving by a construction site. I'll go, oh my God, I could shoot that. I just need to contact these, you know, the architect, the builder, and I'll take pictures with my iPhone and I'll go home and I'll start looking up their websites. And they're not like, hey, if you want to sell us photography, just contact this person. No, it's mostly directed towards like, you know, the kind of tenants that they want to get in that space, or like what their office complex is offering to the people that are going to come in and lease it. And it's a big affair to turn the name of the architect into a contact with the architecture firm, into like actually getting to possibly negotiate or at least have the opportunity to bid on a contract. And then, you know, try to do like some sort of cost sharing program where, you know, hey, the architect and the builder and the cabinet maker and the window installer and the solar panel people can all like do some kind of cost sharing thing where, you know, I make more, but each one of them pays less. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. a big deal.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, I'm in the process of that with, I think, 4 or 5 different clients that are all bigger commercial, that it's not a, can you shoot this? Can you come out tomorrow, the day after? Okay, sure. It's literally a couple of week process at a time.
Yeah, at least, right? Yeah.
And you know, and even if you're, even when you're dealing with those commercial clients and you're not in a core sharing, you know, I just finished a huge commercial job out here for a retail store, and you know, it's for a worldwide client. And after they reached out to me, it was, you know, I sent them a bid, and then it was getting approval from, you know, Europe where their location is, and then coming back to me and then getting the shoot done. And then once I sent them the images, they wanted everything raw to get, so headquarters in Europe can see them and then let me know which ones they want me to edit. A lot of the stuff is a process.
That's why you got to price it accordingly too. That's part of the reason you got to charge so much more for when you're not doing real estate photography. So, yeah. And Brian, what about you? What you got going on for 2019? Besides, you said more video. So that's
from the real estate market, I think it's going to be more video. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty comfortable where I am with the real estate photography, and I don't want to really grow that at this point. If I'm going to spend the time growing the photography part of things, it's going to be my commercial and architectural design stuff. Mm-hmm. As you literally just said, there's more money to be made there. So it's going to be pushing that stuff. As I mentioned 2 minutes ago, you know, I have a couple of bids out for that, but it's a process. So I'm starting now to learn that, you know, you have to be patient, and it might take a month or two for these clients to literally agree to work with you, and that they're not in a rush. They don't need to get this listing up next week because they have the homeowners on their back. Mm-hmm. But that, and then from the real estate standpoint, I want to start pushing video and, you know, getting my video stuff out there across, especially the Long Island region, because there's not much quality video being offered. I see a lot of, say crap, but there's a lot of crap out here.
Would you be looking to partner up or just do more work yourself and be really selective with the choice of clients and pricing and all of that?
As far as video?
Yeah, like would you be, are you still planning to be a one-man show?
I'm kind of torn. Obviously, when I start and if it starts off slow, I'm going to be shooting everything. But, you know, I see myself at a point where if it takes off, where I can, you know, just send one or two guys out to shoot and have, you know, one or two editors and kind of just, you know, micromanage the whole thing. It really depends how it grows.
Yeah, I've listened to some of the other recent podcasts, and it sounds like you've got a lot of ideas in your head right now. And you're everything is on the table, right? You know, you're just considering all the different ways you can go.
Yeah, I mean, for my career down the line in the future, I think I want to, you know, focus more on architectural and design photography. That's my ultimate goal. Mm-hmm. For the short term, as far as the real estate world, for me, honestly, it's just about making money.
Yeah.
You know, the real estate photography, you know, it pays my bills, but it doesn't fulfill me like the architectural stuff does. Mm-hmm. So from that standpoint, it's mostly about just getting as much work. I mean, I'm not a volume shooter, but it's just getting as much work out there to allow me to pay my bills while I grow my other stuff. And adding video and pushing the video is just a way for me to bring additional income to my business.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Rich? What's going on in 2019?
Well, we've really got, well, Brian and I have got the podcast now. We got the new website. And so a lot of things are going on. But for me personally, I'm not sure if I'm going to do any more workshops this year. I may do one. Possibly two, but I'm going to be pushing more my my coaching. I've been doing coaching for a few years, and I've never advertised, and it's always been kind of roundabout word of mouth. And I'm just going to have a new website and do more coaching. I might start doing, I did a test, and it went pretty well last week, a test doing a webinar. And so I'm kind of looking at that and seeing ways to just, I think the whole next 10 years is going to be education and just trying to spread the information it's really enjoyable and it's helping people and the money's there. So I think that's what I'm going to do more of. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, it seems like it comes naturally to you.
Thanks. I enjoy it. I really do. And I like people, most people, not all people, but I like you guys. It's okay. Yeah. But I think we're wrapping it up. This might be our longest podcast we've ever had, Brian.
Yeah, we're getting up there.
Which is no reflection on you, Peter. it's just you rambled on.
I know. I don't know when to shut up.
I'm getting sleepy over here. You know, it's getting really late.
I'm getting sleepy,
you know?
And it's 3 hours earlier than you. Okay, no, it's great. Oh, I want to thank you so much, Peter, and so many of the things you do and you put out there and you say, and your work, you can back it up with your beautiful work. Again, everybody check out Peter's website and his work, and just what it's all about. And you know, I think all three of us have one thing in common. We just love photography, and we really like what we do, and we really enjoy the shooting. So you know, that's how lucky are we. So I'm gonna let you take it out of here, Brian.
Sure. And Peter, if you ever, I know you said also you just love sharing the knowledge, if you ever want to write something for our new blog as a guest post, you don't even have to ask. You can just send it to us and we'll post it up there.
So
feel free to you know, to write something, anything you're thinking about, if you have some thoughts out on a shoot, you know, put it out there on paper, make a video, whatever you want to do, and we'll post it on the new site.
Awesome. For sure. That sounds cool. I love the new feature. I think it sounds fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. And we want to remind everyone to check out our new site, shootingspaces.net. We have a ton of articles, probably a dozen or more at this point up there. And releasing, you know, 2-3 a week.
And just so starting. It's all just a work in progress.
It's just starting, everything from business articles to technique to tutorials. I released a tutorial video a couple of weeks ago. So there's a ton of stuff up there. Just take a look. And, you know, like I said, if anybody wants to possibly make a guest blog post or is interested in being a contributor, just email us and we can take it from there.
Yeah. And cool. I want to please remind everybody, and I always do this, please utilize that feature called Ask the Guys, where you can just go on the website, click the record button, and you can record a 90-second question for us, and either Brian or I will answer it, or we'll have a guest on that specializes in the area of your question. And, you know, do it there, do the question, and then you can add your website and let people know where to find you. And it's good for your Instagram, good for your website. It's all good for your SEO. So please ask the guys, use it.
Yeah. Sounds good. Thank you again, Peter, for coming on. Mm-hmm. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's a total pleasure. I had a lot of fun with you guys.
Great. And I want to just say thank you to Peter and everybody out there in podcast land. Go out there and shoot some spaces.
This episode of Shooting Spaces has been brought to you by HDPhotoHub.com, helping your real estate photography business grow and stay on the cutting edge. Just upload your photos and your clients get a property website, social media flyers, and videos all automatically. Register today at HDPhotoHub.com using referral code SHOOTINGSPACES to get your first property marketing kit absolutely free. HDPhotoHub is where great photos become a powerful marketing kit. Again, that's HDPhotoHub.com.
This has been Shooting Spaces, a real estate photography podcast. Subscribe to the show and don't forget to leave us a review. You can also follow Rich and Brian on social media and at their website, shootingspacespodcast.com.